So good morning, everyone. Today is the last day of a two-week retreat that I'm teaching at Hidden Villa. Some of you know that every September I teach a two-week retreat. And if you've ever been to Hidden Villa, to the hostel there, it's been a really sweet, wonderful place to do a retreat. And it's been wonderful to have these 21 people there and sitting very quietly and very intently. And so as soon as the talk is over, I'm going to head out there in order to close the retreat to their final closing session. So imagine yourself maybe lost in the wilderness, and you have no water, nothing to drink, and you wonder about getting increasingly thirsty, and at some point you come to some bogs, some stagnant little ponds of water that maybe are dirty, polluted, and you might be so thirsty that maybe you still want to drink it because the alternative isn't so good. But you don't drink that much. You keep walking, keep looking, and you find a variety of different kinds of water. Some are a little bit cleaner than the others, but all a little bit dirty. And then finally, you come to a pond that is quite deep, that is fed by underground springs that bring very deep, pure spring water into this wonderful, pure lake. And not only is it wonderful to drink from this, you can drink all you want, you feel quite refreshed. And in fact, it might be such wonderful water that in the heat of the wilderness, you're delighted to take a plunge in and get a nice, nice refreshment that way as well. So with that image in mind, Buddhism offers three deep, pure ponds for us to get refreshed by and to drink from. And the idea is that we all need nourishment. We all need to be refreshed and by something in our life to sustain life. And often people will go around and be satisfied with ponds which are not very deep or pure. Sometimes they're stagnant. Sometimes are actually harmful to drink from. And that to be able to find some really deep, nourishing ponds, refreshing ponds, where you really know the water is pure and clear and clean, can be a great relief. And more than a relief, it could actually nourish us in a great way. So Buddhism offers three such ponds. And at different times, it's appropriate to dip into different ones of these three. Each of them offers a different kind of water, a different kind of nourishment. And very approximately, these three ponds can be associated with body, mind, and heart. And those aren't exactly Buddhist categories, but approximately. And these three ponds are the ponds of kindness, the pond of kindness, the pond of stability, and the pond of clarity. So kindness, stability, and clarity. And kindness corresponds to the heart, kind of nicely for many people. Stability corresponds to the body, and clarity corresponds to the mind. However, this whole idea of difference between mind and body doesn't work so well in Buddhism. We often think of them as being the same. In Buddhism, the clarity is associated with what we can call in English the mind's eye. So the inner eye. And part of the function of deep Dharma practice is to open the mind's eye, Dharma eye. But so kindness is the heart, stability is the body. And clarity is the mind. And each of these three areas are a very important part of Buddhist practice. And as Buddhist practice develops, it's very helpful to get nourished from each of these three and not to choose one over the other, or, you know, only have one pond to choose from, but to actually have all three. And the pond of kindness, I would like to suggest, is the fundamental one, the primary one. And if in doubt, drink from that pond. And if in doubt, see if you can find how to bring kindness into your situation. Bring kindness to yourself, kindness into your meditation practice. Have kindness as being the context for a Buddhist spiritual life. Where's the kindness here? And kindness here is a shorthand for a lot of different things. There's a lot of things that are found in the pond of kindness. One of them is what we call sila, which is ethics or integrity. And there's a certain very deep purity that can come when we live a life of ethical purity. And so to be able to drink from that, not to take ethics or purity or integrity as something that's an obligation, a duty, something that diminishes us, something kind of we have to kind of restrain ourselves and constrain ourselves in order to kind of not break something. The pond of ethical purity is one that we're supposed to nourish us, to refresh us, to drink from it. It's quite deep and quite beautiful. The pond of the heart is also the pond of more kindness or friendliness. To be friendly or kind or caring in our life, to meet our life with kindness and clarity. It also corresponds to compassion. To see where's the compassion in the situation, to be willing to have that open-heartedness that looks for compassion. The pond of the body, of stability, the body is a hugely important part of Buddhist practice. And the whole body is kind of a organ of kind of a spiritual center in its own right. And stability has to do with composure, with concentration. And to find out how can we be composed in any kind of situation, how can we find our stability in any situation we find ourselves in, so we're not pushed around by life, pushed around by experiences, pushed around by our mind, our thoughts, our hindrances. So to have a real deep stability, that is found through being deeply rooted in the body, having a sense of well-being in the body. And part of the function of concentration practice in Buddhism is not just to kind of develop a one-pointedness of mind, which is what people often associate with concentration, but a very important function of concentration practice is actually to get us into the body and develop a stability in the body, a composure in the body, that where the body then becomes a place of nourishment, of refreshment, rather than a place of tension and holding and all these different things or being imbalanced. We find our balance through the body. So we dip into the body, and the body becomes a resource for refreshing us. And then the third pond is that of the, likely we call it that of the mind, and that's that the pond of clarity. And that's the ability to see what is going on with clarity. And sometimes in meditation circles, we talk about, or people talk about, being the observer. And some people find it very, very helpful to step back from their entanglement in life and experiences and observe what is going on, observe what's going on in their mind, rather than seeing their anxiety as something to get entangled with, to be the observer of the anxiety, or their ill will, or their fear, or their doubt, or their desire. And so not be caught in its orbit, not be attached or kind of influenced by these forces that can move through us, but to step back and find a certain distance, and in that distance, some freedom, some ease, some ability not to be in the sway of these forces. So to step back and be the observer. And that can also be very helpful in, you know, situations in the world where you know, things are chaos or difficult around you, and you step back and you kind of can have the capacity to be kind of the observer, the objective observer, the little bit, in the best senses of the term, the detached observer of the situation. I liken it to that of a kindergarten teacher who's been a teacher for a long time. Kindergarten teachers are some of the great heroes of our society. There should be little trading cards for kindergarten teachers. And, you know, and I'll trade you two of their, or one of him, and sell them on eBay, you know. So you know, there's a really great kindergarten teacher who, you know, sometimes it's utter chaos in that kindergarten class, or the tantrums in the, I mean, the World War III's that are starting in the classrooms, you know, and these, I mean, it's pretty awesome to see that human nature can, you know, can take these little angels and turn them into something else quicker than the blink of an eye. And so, the well-seasoned kindergarten teacher gets involved and tries to handle the situation wisely, but stays somehow above the fray and is compassionately engaged, but has this clarity of mind to not get, you know, as the observer, watches it all, but doesn't get pulled into it. So the clarity of mind sometimes associated with being the observer or experience. In Buddhism, the idea of being the observer needs to at some point fall away, because the idea of there being someone who watches is a little bit problematic. But the idea that you become just the observation. And clarity also means having that wonderful wise detachment, as we see, but also being able to see much more deeply what is going on in our life. And here the suggestion is that clarity, that kind of clarity, is not something dry, not something that not something dry, but rather it's like a pond that we can dip into and be refreshed from, we can drink from. One of the wonderful word plays in Pali, the Buddhist language, is that the word for joy or rapture, the word is piti, P-I-T-I, also means to drink. It's kind of has both meanings. And so to drink from these wonderful ponds is also, to be nourished by it, is also to tap into a certain kind of joy or well-being that each of these ponds provides. So a person's wandering in the wilderness and they come across one of these great, beautiful Buddhist ponds of kindness, stability, and clarity. And the person first might lean over the water and look into the water. And one of the first things the person sees is their own reflection. And that is very interesting. Because when we see our own reflection in there, we might react to the reflection rather than to the water. And there's a lot of different things people see when they see their own reflection. Some people see something that really frightens them, and they run away. It's better to find some kind of water which is, you know, kind of stagnant and overgrown, because then at least you don't have that reflection of that horrible thing. And people would rather not see themselves, rather than that, you know, they would rather have a spirituality or something that takes them away from themselves, don't have to face themselves. Or you might see, you see yourself, you might see, you might be like a narcissist, right, who saw his own reflection in the water and fell in love. So people fall in love with themselves. Wow, I'm just the best. This is the greatest. And, or they see themselves in the reflection and say, oh, it's all up to me. I have to, you know, I have to take responsibility. I have to fix this. I have to work on this. And they're so caught up in tinkering and trying to take responsibility of their life and try to fix things and understand things that they lose track of the fact that the nourishment is right there, you know, in the reflection. And so they kind of get lost in their mind thinking about stuff. So I think there's something very significant that happens when we do spiritual practice, where sooner or later we encounter ourselves. And when we encounter ourselves, we often encounter our self-image, how we reflect ourselves to ourselves. And there can be a lot of reactions to that that get in the way of actually being able to dip down and drink from that water. So, so what is it you see? And some people, when they see themselves, they have such a relationship to themselves that it precludes the possibility of going any further. They're so frightened by it, so traumatized by what they see there, or so confused by it, or something, Or as they fall in love with themselves. They're so enamored, their conceit comes in. So it's very important to kind of, not be fooled by the reflection. There is a famous Zen teacher named Tozan who wrote an enlightenment poem, and kind of had to do with the moment of his so-called enlightenment or some kind of realization he had. And Tozan was crossing a bridge, and he looked over the edge of the bridge down into the water, and he saw his reflection in the water. And he realized, in looking at the reflection, he wrote his poem on this, where he said, "It, the reflection in the water, is me, but I am not it." So the reflections we have, the ways we see ourselves, all the ways in which we kind of identify, this is who I am, there might be some truth to it. It is you in some sense. But you are not it. Don't limit yourself there. Don't use that to define yourself. Because you're much more. So once you kind of get over the fact that you're kind of or stop being caught by the reflection of what you see there, then the reflection teaches you something very important. And that is, the reflection you see in the pond is you. But you're not it. That in order to taste in the water, to dip down into the water is not outside of you. You're not going to go wandering around the world actually looking for a physical pond that you're going to dip into. Go look for the perfect Buddhist community that you know you're going to kind of hang out with. It's because that the pond is there, or the perfect teaching, or whatever. The pond is not outside of you. The pond is inside of you. It's your heart. It's your body. It's your mind that you need to drink from, that you need to connect to. So there has to be a willingness to turn, in a sense, in order to find the nourishment within ourselves. How do we get nourished ourselves? How do we get refreshed from the resources that are here within ourselves? So one of the ways is we have to start drinking from these things. We have to start utilizing, touching into them. And so touching into kindness. What is your relationship to kindness? To integrity, to compassion. And some people wait until they have kindness before they has any meaning for them. But the suggestion is, don't wait. Even the desire to be kind is a movement of kindness. Even the wish, I wish I could be compassionate, is the beginning of compassion. The wish to be friendly is the beginning of friendliness. So to begin somehow exercising this capacity, finding where it's at. And at this retreat that I'm teaching now at Hidden Villa, it is so invaluable for people to, when they engage in kind of in-depth, intensive practice, to regularly be reminded about the importance of kindness. So as not to be in conflict with their experience, to not be judging themselves harshly or negatively, or upset by what they see, what goes on, but constantly be kind, generous, gracious about ourselves, our experience, what's going on. And to exercise that ability, where's the kindness here? So we don't forget about kindness. We don't forget about friendliness. We don't forget that as a value. Because it's very easy to forget it. And think, I got to strive. I got to push. Something else has to happen here. Or I'm the only one who's the klutz here in this retreat. You know, everyone else is, I'm sure, they're on the edge of Buddhahood. And I'm just the one who's the bumbling fool. And one of the things I stressed at the retreat is that wherever a person is in their practice is the right place for them to be. Isn't that good? Isn't that lucky? Wow. You wonder where you're supposed to be. Wherever you are in your practice. So if you're developing kindness, that's the right place. If your place is stability, that's the right place. If it's clarity, that's the right place. if you're dealing with distracted mind, or you're dealing with difficult childhood memories, or if you're dealing with states of beautiful samadhi, whatever is happening, that is the right place for you to be. And that teaching is the antidote to the all too common phenomena of deciding, this shouldn't be happening. I should be further along. It should be different. It is what it is. Wherever you are in your practice, that's the right place to be. And then what we're being asked to do, and this is kind of the refrain or kind of the constant we come back to, is given that this is what's happening in my life, in my situation here, given this what's happening, where's the kindness? Where's the stability? And where's the clarity? Or let's find, let's offer or discover where kindness is in this experience, where stability is, and where clarity is. Let's look for that. Let's develop that. And to do that is to begin to take responsibility for what's happening in your life, as opposed to feeling you're the victim of stuff and need to kind of react to things. It's changing the whole kind of dynamic of how we understand ourselves from one of being victim of life and kind of going along, kind of just, you know, things happening to us, to someone who begins to actually consciously drink from deeper ponds, from deeper and purer ponds. So as we start doing this with time and patience, these ponds start to refresh us, start to nourish us. And we start noticing that these ponds come from very, very deep springs. Very, very deep, deep springs. One person at the retreat said, I'm realizing that I'm now drinking from a deeper well. I'm now at a much deeper well than I was in before. This idea of discovering that there's actually depth, huge, huge depths within ourselves to tap into, deep springs that are available. So we drink from this, but remember that reflection of yourself in the water. There's something very deep about seeing yourself in it, because that's you. And so at some point, it's not you drinking the water. At some point, you fall into the pond. You dive into the pond. And it's a much more refreshing to kind of be in the wonderful, cool, refreshing water after being in the hot desert or something. But then, you become the pond. It's not just like that the pond is something that, you know, separate from you or distant from you, but you become the pond. You become the kindness. You become the stability. You become the clarity. It doesn't feel like something that's separate from you but something you've become. Now, the part of the value of tasting and touching or diving into, at least temporarily, these different ponds is to understand that these ponds exist. They're there. If you're wandering around and you don't even know that those ponds are available, don't even know they're there, then you're going to settle for the stagnant water. You're going to be pursuing other avenues of nutrition, of drinking and eating and stuff. And you're going to make other things that your watering holes. Some people make sensual desire their watering hole. Some people make anxiety their watering hole. Someone told me recently, when I'm not anxious about anything at all, I have nothing to be anxious about, then I get anxious that I'm not noticing something I should be anxious about. So, you know, some people have a habit of always drinking from certain watering holes. So the watering hole of anxiety. Some people, the watering hole is greed, wanting, desire. Some people, it's the watering hole of self-criticism, self-loathing. Some people, it's the watering hole of, hate. Some people, it's other, you know. So one of the teachings of the Buddha, which I think we all understand, he said, whatever we frequently think about becomes the inclination of the mind. So we're developing a habit. So whatever we do frequently becomes our disposition. So if we're constantly dipping into the world of anxiety, that becomes more our disposition. If we constantly dip into the world of greed, that becomes our disposition. If we dip into the water of kindness, or stability, or clarity, that becomes our disposition. That kind of shapes us and helps kind of, build up who we are. So part of the value of beginning to drink and maybe plunge into these three important ponds in Buddhism is that we begin realizing there are alternative watering holes from how we usually are. And one of the very important steps in Buddhist spirituality is to have an understanding that there are better watering holes than the ones you have been drinking from. And so to understand that maybe then allows us to become disenchanted or disinterested in some of the watering holes that we have been drinking from. They no longer seem so interesting. They don't seem to have the level of promise that we thought initially they had, because we thought everything was going to, all our well-being was going to be found there. And we realized that no, they're not going to, and there are better places of nourishment, of refreshment. And so to see that difference and to actually come to a point where actually you decide to make a decisive change from one way of living to another is a very important moment, and maybe in any spiritual life. And one of the ways of understanding that is you're deciding that you're going to now drink from a different watering hole. You understand the watering hole you were drinking in, and you realize there are better watering holes to be nourished from. And the watering holes that Buddhism offers can be seen as, all of Buddhism can be seen as somehow contained in the three ponds that I referred to today. So there's the pond of kindness, the pond of stability, and the pond of clarity. They are all nourished from the same spring. So if you follow one of them down to its depth, you find where they come together and join, and they become kind of like one. If you are in doubt which one to develop, which one to drink from, always choose kindness. If you're in doubt. There might be other ones that are wiser, but if you're in doubt, choose kindness. And let kindness be the foundation for all this. Let kindness be the foundation of Buddhist practice. The default, the basis, the beginning. And so as you sit down to meditate, don't sit down to be the great spiritual warrior of the ages who's going to do a mad dash to clarity, enlightenment. Sit down and see if you can tap into a place of kindness. Kindness doesn't have to be weak. It doesn't have to be wishy-washy. Kindness can have tremendous strength behind it and tremendous wisdom. But tap into kindness first. And then from that foundation of kindness, you can perhaps develop the other, or develop or touch into, drink from the other ponds, the deep, deep ponds. Kindness, stability, and clarity. So, thank you very much.